Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
McMonagle here with you on this Football Friday. We'll get into the football. But, man, you guys love talking Juan Soto as he is going to meet with the Mets. The Mets will fly to Los Angeles, Southern California, to talk to Juan Soto. They are the first team to talk to him. And, I mean, I think that makes sense. Like, I think it's strategic. I don't think it's necessarily like, you know, Steve Cohen wants some sort of, straw pull or... somehow he was just lucky to be the first guy to go meet him. I think everybody knows. Everybody knows. And I can sing a little bit. Well, and I can't wait for Christmas season. I'm going to really try my best to get into Christmas season. I'm going to play a lot of Christmas music. Last year I did a whole thing on Christmas hot takes or something. I don't know. I did some radio Christmas bit. We'll bring that back too. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Christmas music. No, Juan Soto and the Mets. If, like, everybody knows that Steve Cohen is interested, right? And everybody knows that Steve Cohen has the most money. And if you listen yesterday, we argued, me and Marco, and I understand that the Yankees have just as, in reality, because he's not going to offer him $10 billion, that the Yankees and Mets have similar amounts of money. But we all know that the biggest purse resides in Queens. It's just a fact. So the idea of getting that meeting out of the way for all the other teams who want to come, like, the other teams can't come in and, like, they know he's already met with Steve Cohen. If I'm going to meet with him, if I'm going to take this seriously, I got to bring a big offer because I know Steve Cohen's, I can't go there, meet with him, charm him and go, you know, hey, I'll give you $580 million or $550 million, and like, this is what we'll, you know, we have this, we have that, we got, like, you know, oh, he's already met with Steve Cohen. I can't come in and offer nothing. Like, I'm going to embarrass myself. Like, I think instead of waiting for the big guy at the end, you bring him right up to the front. You make it very public. He's the first guy to talk to him. He's aggressive. He wants him. He's the richest. Anybody who follows, you better bring your paycheck because I've already talked to the big guy. I think that makes sense. And I think that's how Scott Boras wanted to handle it. I don't read anything into it other than that. I don't think it's more likely he'll sign with the Mets now. I don't think it's Juan Soto himself eager to meet with the Mets before everybody else. Because if you believe, like many Met fans believe, who I've talked to, that this is years in the making. That, you know, he answered questions in previous seasons about his favorite ballpark to play, and he said Citi Field. And, you know, he always wanted to come to New York because of the location, you know, because of the family in Dominican Republic. And he wants the East Coast and New York before ever getting traded to the Yankees. Like, there was always this thought. It's in the works for years. The minute Steve Cohen came here, this was the guy he was always going to get. It's been, you know, the biggest, you know, untold secret that everybody knows, the worst kept secret, that's the phrase I was looking for, it's the worst kept secret in baseball, he's going to be a Met. If you believe that, why meet first? Like, if that, like, I don't, like, that doesn't make any sense to me. If this was just a fait accompli and he's going through the motions of enjoying every, of this process and hearing everybody out and getting all the free meals and touring the cities and touring the ballparks or whatever else, talk to everybody owner and see what people might actually want to offer or whatever. Like, if it's just the fait accompli, you're going to the Mets, why wouldn't you meet with everybody else first and then just wait to sign with the Mets? I don't read anything into this. I don't think it's more likely, less likely, more impactful, less impactful. We know he's going to meet with the Mets. We know the Mets are interested. And for me, I feel it's pretty safe to say that it's a Met-Yankee thing anyway. So the idea that he wasn't going to meet or talk to half of the teams that are legitimately interested, it's just, I don't know why we, it's not a story to me that he's meeting with, like, it's not a story that it's first. It's not a story. Doesn't mean a damn thing. 888-808-1019. Steve in Bayside. What's up, Steve?
What's up? I seem to remember Steve Cohen going out to meet Boras last year, too. I think he does this every year.
Yeah, I mean, he had clients. So I can't remember which ones. They were big on Yamamoto. That was not a Boris client. I don't remember him being in on many others. But 2 years ago, famously, they made the deal for Carlos Correa while he was in Hawaii sipping martinis. So I think him and Boris have a good relationship, obviously. Obviously, they went and got Max Scherzer a couple years before that. And that must have been the same year, the Scott Boris and the Carlos Correa. It doesn't matter. But, I mean, we all know he was going to go meet with him. So, like, I don't understand the news of it. I just don't. But, yes,
yeah.
he might meet with him regularly just to keep tabs on the most successful agent in the sport who has the most clients. They probably do have some sort of meeting. But it might not be public, but it's public now because everything Juan Soto is going to be public right now.
Yeah, and he also, Boris has Alonso, too. Anyway, let me give you two Yankee off seasons and tell me what you think of them.
Yes.
Scenario A: they sign Soto for $50 million. They sign Christian Walker for $20 million.
Yeah.
They bring back Gio Urshela, who hasn't really hit for 3 years, for $5 million. And then you bring up the kid. You have the kid in Triple A to, you know, is backing up his second base. That's $75 million. Okay,
yes.
that's my stars and scrubs, okay?
Right.
Now you have scenario two. They go bring in Teoscar Hernandez, $20 million, Christian Walker, $20 million. They trade for Eugenio Suarez, who there's a kid in AAA that the Diamondbacks love. He's only making $15
million. Mm-hmm.
30 home run bat, good third baseman, about 32, 33 years old. Anyway, $15 million for Eugenio Suarez, and then you go bring in Max Fried to be your number two, another $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
That is also $75 million.
Right. One, you're just assuming numbers, but let's just assume. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to do something.
Yeah, I got you.
But anyway, you know, roughly the same payroll commitment for Soto, Walker, and really nothing else.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Or bring in those four players. I mean, here's my other point. I think if you bring back Soto, and even bringing in Christian Walker, if you do go back to the World Series, you're probably going to be saying the same thing when, you know, all throughout the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
we were saying 5-9, 5-9, 5-9. Mm-hmm. I see scenario one as us saying the same thing, whereas in scenario two, I think you spread the money around and you probably have a deeper, better team.
Yeah, I completely disagree with you. One, now you're loading up the way you just did it. You're loading up on right-handed power, which we killed Brian Cashman for years. That's a very easy team to go through with a bullpen, such as the Dodgers have. A lot of easy decisions, right-handed lanes. And then also, that's fine and good. I hear what you're saying. Deeper team, the 5-9. We also had Juan Soto, who hit the 3-run home run, who sent them to the World Series, who's a tremendous player, better than everyone you just mentioned. And they can still get, we still talk about base running and defense. In the second scenario, you're much better at first base. You still have, you know, a young kid coming up. You got to build through your foundational pieces,
well, I have
too.
Walker
and defense.
Either way.
Yeah, I understand. That's what I'm saying. Like, so you have Walker, like, you're still getting better defensively. That does lengthen the lineup, adding Walker. You got Jazz, hopefully a full year in a Yankee uniform. You got Wells, hopefully a full year in a Yankee uniform, who gets better. He was the cleanup hitter who changed the season. We remember the weak hitter in the postseason who didn't perform, but we're forgetting the catcher who had a 900 OPS for the second half of the season and was arguably the best offensive catcher in the sport, who they put cleanup and got the team back on track. Like, we got to give him a chance.
Yeah,
Wells is on the
team either way, though.
No, I'm not saying what I'm saying is the lineup 5-9. You're saying that's still a problem with Juan Soto, and I'm saying even with some of the solutions that are here, the 5-9 could be better next year. I'd rather have the great player and bank on the 5-9 improving just in inherently than I am trying to go out and piece this player together and that player together. Oh, and I get this guy and that guy. Like, I want the great player. I want the great player. It's more valuable to me to have the great player.
Look, I understand that, but also if you are basically bringing back Juan Soto and not doing much else, the rest of the team is also a year older,
mm-hmm.
and I like the idea of spreading the money around because also you're kind of defraying some of that. You know, baseball teams, I always look at them as a decaying asset. Where you have to.
That's why I like signing 26-year-old superstars. Because now you're talking about helping him this year, and then as the money goes on, like as Stanton's contract comes off the books, as DJ LeMahieu's contract comes off the books, you're talking about a short-term solution with a 34-year-old first baseman. You're talking about Teoscar Hernandez, who, I mean, what is he, 30, 31 or so? Yeah. I don't know what he's going to be in 3 years, and quite honestly, yes, he had a nice season. I've seen him have terrible seasons, too. Like, I don't know what he's going to be in a Yankee uniform. He performed as a Dodger, so I would think he could handle the big market and the pressure, but I don't know. And now you're talking about, now I'm starting all over without a superstar and an aging judge making $40 million a year in 3 years, where in 3 years I have still one of the premier great players in the prime of his career with Juan Soto.
So, all right, well, the difference between Teoscar Hernandez and Soto...
Yeah.
Well, I should say, yes, the difference between Teoscar Hernandez and Soto, but it's Teoscar plus Eugenio Suarez and Max Fried.
Okay.
I think that those three players, if you want to just talk war, you're probably adding more war to your team. You are adding more war to your team than you are just with Juan Soto.
Yeah, I still don't think you're better. I still rather have Juan Soto. And plus, I know Juan Soto, it's me and the Mets competing for Juan Soto. I don't know who's competing for Teoscar Hernandez. And you might say $20 million. I might have to give more if we get into a bidding war, because this is a light free agent market and the best players are gone and people might not want to overpay for a Pete Alonso or anything. Like, it's easy to say it's this or that. I'm competing now in a market where the entire, 26 Major League Baseball teams, I'm competing with, and I could be overpaying for Teoscar Hernandez. I could be overpaying for a Max Fried.
I could be overpaying. I mean, it's not that thin a market. Really, what was the thinnest one when I was looking at this is the third base market. That's a really thin market this year.
Yeah. No, in plan B, I'd much rather pay Alex Bregman than trade for Suarez.
No, I see. I don't like Bregman is a little guy. Little guys tend to not age very well. I think that would be a few good years and then you'd be regretting. I think he's going to get 7 or 8 years, and I think you'll regret the last five.
Yeah, I mean, I also have to give up talent instead of just money for Suarez, who I don't know is okay. Like, I'm just, I want the 26-year-old generational talent. Like, you guys are overthinking it. You're overthinking it. You think you can spread the wealth around and do this and do that. I don't know what happens. I don't know how I have to sign those guys. There's other teams in free agency. It's not like I either have Juan Soto or my choice of who I want from everybody else. It doesn't work that way. I don't know who I'll get. I don't know where he wants to play. I don't know who else offers him a contract that he seems that, like, it's not like it's just, oh, he'll come to play for the Yankees. Now I got to overpay for these guys to make sure they're Yankees. I'd rather overpay the superstar. Like, I don't know. I have no idea what the market's going to look like. There are other teams willing to spend money. The Padres are willing to spend money. The Mariners might be willing to spend money this year. The Baltimore Orioles are willing to spend money this year. Like, you make it sound like it's so easy. Oh, we'll just trade for this guy and we'll get this guy. Like, yeah, your plan B. My plan is to sign the one guy in the free agent market who's already been here, who took this team to the World Series, by the way. Took the team to the World Series. If they had nothing else, they have a World Series team. But all I have to do is be the biggest bidder, be the New York Yankees, who have traditionally signed their stars, who have signed the biggest players when they want them. All I have to do is sign that one guy. You're out there making all these moves that I'm theoretically going to get for the New York Yankees. Now, they'll get some of them because they'll do something, but I don't know. Teoscar Hernandez wants to be a Yankee. How much money is Teoscar Hernandez going to get? Who else is going to offer him big money off of this big year with the Dodgers, hitting home runs in the postseason? Maybe someone else says, you know what? I need Teoscar Hernandez. The Giants go, I have nobody. I need a star here. I'm willing to pay him $30 million a year. Now I got to pony up $30 million to get your plan B? Now I'm more than halfway to making up the same money to Soto on the one player that you, on a conversation at 3:18 in the morning, told me is $20 million a year? I don't know. I don't know. I'd rather just have to go get the one guy, and then we'll focus on plan B if there is need for one. I'm sorry, I would rather have the 26-year-old who's going to be great for a decade. Like you just said, you get Teoscar Hernandez, you get Christian Walker, who's 34, you get Suarez, Bregman, whoever, in 3 years, I might not have anybody who's good. I might have four contracts I had to overpay and give extra years for, and have four guys who aren't good. In 4 years, I might be paying the end of a Teoscar Hernandez contract, a Bregman contract, a Suarez contract, whatever other contract you want, a Max Fried contract, all of those contracts that you're looking at as bargains and filling a roster. In 4 years, I might be paying the back end of terrible contracts on all four of those players, as opposed to paying $50 million for still an MVP candidate every single year. You know what I'm saying? Oh, the end of that, Soto contract could be brutal. Yeah, maybe. But the end of every one of those contracts you asked me to just go sign in Plan B could be brutal in 3 years. And I could still have Stanton on the books, an old no good Teoscar Hernandez, an old no good Alex Bregman, an old no good Christian Walker, an old no, like, no thanks. Why don't you just give me the 26-year-old? Thank you. Steve in Rockland, what's up, Steve?
Oh, please give me the 26-year-old, Chris.
Nah, I'm with you, man.
So, you know, you said something before, and I was intrigued. You know, you're talking about the Yankee fans.
Yes.
Who think that, the team that just got to the fifth game of the World Series is no good, and the guys who were, responsible for the play. How about this? You know what I think? Why I think that is? I'll tell you why. Because a lot of these people who hold this particular opinion were probably born between 1986 and 1990. All right?
Right.
But they don't know what happened between 1965 and 1975. They don't know what happened between 1982 and 1994. Those are huge chunks, okay? Now, to be fair,
yeah,
the Yankees have not won the World Series in 15 years.
Correct.
However, they
and that's
are
more,
playoff...
That's more relevant than what happened between 82 and 94, to be fair.
Right, exactly. If you were born in 1987 and I say Stump Merrill, you probably are not going to know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Because you didn't have to live with that.
I understand.
You didn't have to root for that. You didn't have to say, my goodness.
Yeah, you didn't have to root for, you didn't have to root for Mel Hall bringing in live cougars into the clubhouse and dating teenage girls. Yeah, you didn't have to, have to root
and,
for that.
And bullying Bernie Williams.
Yeah. No, I understand. I understand. I get your point. But the Yankees since 96 have instilled that. Right? And even George kind of, even in his tenure in those years where they didn't win, it's World Series or bust. They are the original Ricky Bobbies. You are first or you're last. That's it. That's how a lot of Yankee fans see it. And I actually heard John Boy make this point. I don't know if I agree with it necessarily completely, because I don't know if they still sell that as much. Like, I don't think Hal and Cash still sell this as much. It's inert inside. They'll tell you it's a failure publicly. They'll go, yeah, we didn't make the World Series. We failed. You know, we didn't win the World Series. We failed. You know, you got to win the World Series. But they don't push it as much as George did. I think they've tried to get off that a little bit, clearly, by keeping these guys who haven't won the World Series. But John Boy's point was it's the Yankees continue to push that brand, and that's why the fan base feels that way, that it's World Series or bust. And I don't know if I agree with it as much today, but certainly since the 90s team, at least that's really all I remember. Again, my first year of really remembering baseball and following a full season of baseball, as opposed to, like, probably prior to 93, I knew who Don Mattingly was. I would watch a Yankee game here or there. I would go to a game maybe here or there. I don't have the memory of my first Yankee game like so many people do. I don't know why. But, like, I was aware of the Yankees. My dad was a Yankee fan. I probably had I had Yankee gear and shirts and stuff. But my first year of remembering being a Yankee fan, following the game day in and day out, is 1993. So since then, and since the dynasty teams, it's been win a world championship or it's an absolute failure. And you're right, they haven't won since 15. And we can go back to, 64 to 76 and, 82 to 96, really. You know, I get it. But that doesn't change the fact that they've not been good enough here. I think that's fair. But the vitriol for the team, that, like, disappointment, like, I don't think, like, you could just say, look, Brian Cashman hasn't done it now. It's been 15 years. He's been here forever. It's time to move on. Don't you think that is a reasonable, fair discussion? Aaron Boone, you know, I mean, what other manager gets to not win a World Series in his first 8 years? Like, there's been some real failings with the team. Like, I think maybe a new voice. I mean, they said the same thing about Joe Girardi, time for a new voice. I think that makes sense. No, that is a fair, reasonable take. But it doesn't go that way. It goes, nothing Cashman has ever done was good. He was handed a core four by Gene Stickmichael and Bob Watson, and he doesn't really get any championship other than 09, when his owner went out and spent half a billion dollars to bring in the top three free agents. Other than that, and he still had Jeter in the core four in that World Series too, he's a terrible GM. He is a moron. Anyone who has that payroll could win. He's an absolute joke and disgrace. And every day with him as the GM of the New York Yankees is an insult to every single Yankee fan breathing air. That's the take. Aaron Boone is a moron who they will never win with, who is a complete softy, who hands out cookies and milk after games, who rather be your friend than your boss, is an absolute joke and disgrace. Who cares how many wins he had? With that roster, I could win too, although I guess the GM put together that roster that you could win too, although maybe that's Hal's money who did that, but you hate Hal as well because he doesn't spend enough money. But somehow they're winning all these games, but it's nobody, like, nobody actually does anything good. It's a miracle they're winning all these games. Like, he's the worst. Get rid of him. It's a joke. It's an embarrassment. Every second that he's the manager of the team is an insult to Yankee fans taking breath everywhere. Like, that's the takes. It's never just, I'm frustrated. It's, this is disgusting. I can't look at it. I hate them. They're averaging an ALCS appearance every other year. They make the playoffs almost every year, and they were just in the World Series. Disappointment? Yes. Frustration? Yes. Out and out, hatred? I'll never understand it. I'll never understand it. When we look at the Giants and we look at the Jets and we look at what the Knicks were for two decades, like, those are the teams to despise and hate. A team that's consistently in the playoffs, a team that's made the ALCS every other year for the last six or seven. Disappointment, not good enough. They're the New York Yankees. They're held to a different standard. All that's true. Hatred? I'll never understand. But I'm different. I guess I'm different. I don't know. But that's how a lot of Yankee fans feel. And right now, when you look at this team, like, I think the last call just made it very, not the most recent one, the one before who made the Plan B call. Terrible with names sometimes. So I apologize. But he made a good argument on how the team could be better spreading money around. But I do think most of the people who don't want Juan Soto, it's because they think the team stinks. And they need to fill this hole and this hole and that hole and that hole. And they're terrible and they're this. And the bottom of the lineup sucks. And this sucks and that sucks and this sucks and that sucks. And, you know, we need to just clear house with everything. And we need to fill 10 different holes with solid players. Enough of these superstars. Just get me guys who put the ball in play. I'm tired of the strikeouts. I'm tired of analytics. I'm tired of exit velocity. I'm tired of this. When the Dodgers do the exact same thing, went out and bought all the superstars and won. Their superstars played better. And honestly, other than Freddie Freeman, not many of them did. Not many of them did. Edgar in Colorado. What's up, Edgar?
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, buddy. What's up?
Mac the Knife, one of my favorite songs. Love it.
Yep.
I got a couple of questions. I just want to pick your brain so you can do most of the talking.
Okay.
If you, Chris, had to guess, what's it going to take? How many years and how much money to sign Soto? If you had to guess, Chris.
Let's just go to absolutely get him, to be sure of it. I would say, to be sure of it, 14 years, $15 million, 14 years, $700 million. That's, wow. That gets it done, in my opinion. That probably gets it done.
You know, in 2 years, $30 million comes off the books from Mayhew. In 3 years, $86 million comes off with Stanton, so they could do it. If they sign him for what you just said, do they have enough money to sign other players?
Yes.
Or no?
Yeah, I was just okay. I was just going to say that the payroll after everything that's been is going to be cut off after now they got to lose everybody like right now the bare bones payroll. I just saw it on Twitter. Let me see if I can find it again. But that's not re-signing anybody. Gleyber Torres, all the bullpen guys, obviously Clay Holmes, getting money off the books from Josh Donaldson, believe it or not, he still had money on the books. Like, I think the payroll, I'll find it, but it's the payroll, I think right now, if you get rid of everybody, I think you're sitting somewhere around 230, right? If they cut, great, I just saw this, the Bobby Malone, who does a good job, he's one of the Yankee guys on Twitter, he put out this. The payroll currently is 238. If they cut Grisham, Meza, and Brubaker, I think, yeah. Brubaker's the backup catcher in Major League 2, by the way. If they cut all those guys, it's 226, right? So $226 million. You would the tax threshold, I believe, is $304 million. So if you put them at 226, that's just under $80 million to spend this year. Just under 80. You sign Soto to 50, let's say it's 50, you got $30 million to play with. What does $30 million get you? I don't know. Top reliever in Christian Walker? A close to top reliever? I don't know about Tanner Scott, but like a good reliever in Christian Walker? Christian Walker and a third baseman? Christian Walker and a defensive first? Second baseman? Like you're going to add... That's if it's $50 million. You'll have $30 million to play with. You can get. You want to improve defense? You want to cut down strikeouts? You want to improve base running? You can get two $15 million players or three $10 million players who are good defensively, put the bat on the ball, and run the bases. And now you're a better team on the margins, and you still have Juan Soto. Now, you're not going to be a dominant lineup 1-9. I think we all understand that, although I need Volpe to... like. When you make bets on Volpe, he needs to be better. You make, you know, Wells is going to have to be there and be the guy he was for the middle of the summer when he had a 900 OPS in July and August. Like, that's what he's going to, he has to be close to that guy and not the guy he was at the end of the year and in the postseason. Jason Dominguez has to be a part of this team. Like, those guys have to hit. Otherwise, like, you can't in free agency go out and buy everybody. I think we all agreed they had to go get Judge. Like, you're bringing in a 26-year-old superstar, and you need the stars, and then you need your farm system to come through. So you could be young, athletic, cheap in that department, and then pay for the stars. That's how it works. That's a good way to build a team. So I would guess they have at least somewhere around $30 million after Soto to spend. And I think that can get you a first or third baseman and a relief pitcher. I don't think they're going to be in the starting market. Unless they miss out on Juan Soto. I don't think they're going to be getting a starting pitcher. I know they are. John Heyman reported they've been aggressive in the starting pitching market. I don't think they're going to be. And again, like I heard Keith say it, and I know we don't trust Carlos Rodon. Over the course of a regular season, I do. Now, I know you need big postseason starts. I get it. But I think the rotation right now of Cole, Rodon, Luis Gil, and Clark Schmidt, and possibly Nestor Cortez, maybe they can get someone at the back end of that rotation to take over for Nestor or be a fifth or, you know, be a sixth or seventh starter in case those don't work out. They're going to have to do something like that. But you're also going to have young kids from the farm system come up and try and take place into the pitching rotation. I doubt they're going to be at the top of the pitching market. I do. I doubt they're going to look for another starting pitcher. That might change if they don't get Juan Soto, but plan A, that extra $30 million they'll have to play with, $30, $40 million to play with, it's not going to be in the starting rotation.
Your official station to talk Yankees. The Fan, 101.9 FM and always live on the free Odyssey app. Download it today.
All right, McMonagle here with you. Let's just get right to the calls. We got a quick segment here. We got picks coming up before the top of the hour. Let's go to Joe in the Bronx. What's up, Joe?
Hey, C-Mac, great show.
Thank you, buddy.
Love your show always. You know, I'm looking back at the, you know, when the Yankees, basically a dynasty back in, starting in 96 and everything else. But, you know, who was the highest paid player on there?
On that team? Derek Jeter. And then in the 90s, while they were winning in the during the, like,
yeah,
the three-peat?
I'm
trying to think of who the highest paid player was. Probably David Cone would be my guess.
Yeah. You know, C-Mac, I agree with you 100% with Juan Soto. I mean, he's an incredible talent. But these gritty players, like, you had Scott Brosius back in 96. I mean,
98.
You had some that Von Hayes. And it was just like, yeah, yeah.
Von Hayes? Charlie Hayes?
Charlie Hayes, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm thinking about the Phillies, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean. But don't you think, I mean, that call kind of made sense. I mean, like I said, I agree with you 100%, C-Mac, with you have to sign Juan Soto, but I don't know. Like,
yeah,
so many areas to fill, and, you know, like some gritty ball players that,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he's not gritty.
Well, where'd they get, I'm just saying, where did they get those gritty ball players from? Like the Yankees, because they got it from the farm system mainly. I mean, they had one of the great young cores in recent memory, and you know they had aging old former star players as bench role players in Fielder and Strawberry and obviously from the Expos, Tim Raines, Again, who just won the World Series? The team of tough, gritty little players or the superstar team with Hall of Famers hitting 1, 2, and 3? Like, who's the highest paid player on the Dodgers? Who won exactly? And you want to say, oh, well, you know, the Arizona Diamondbacks got to a World Series, sure, and then where were they the next year? The Texas Rangers got to a World Series. Where were they the next year? Like, you want to have sustained winning. You're not going to do it with, like, tough. You want to sign 9 David Ecksteins, go ahead. You're not going to get to the playoffs. Like, they need a couple of those. Those guys aren't expensive. You can find little gritty players on the cheap. Brian Cashman did. Brian Cashman found Gio Urshela on the cheap. Carpenter on the cheap. Like, you surround with guys like that. Again, who won the NLCS MVP? Tommy Edman. There was rumors that the Yankees could trade for Edman. They got Jazz Chisholm instead. Everybody would have preferred Jazz. If they did nothing but trade for Tommy Edman, we would have been screaming that Cash didn't do a good enough job. How could you only trade for Tommy Edman? He's a light-hitting, blah, 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 blah. Then the guy ended up having a good postseason. Next year, he might not get a friggin' hit in the postseason. I don't know. But again, you can't sign 10 Tommy Edmonds. You need Juan Soto.
Talk New York sports on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Football Sunday.
It's been so long, I forgot this.
So good to me.
Yeah, judging by his face, so did Marco.
I forgot him. It is so good to me. It's so good to be back for a football Sunday. Now, we haven't done picks in a while, all three of us being here. I'm told Fliegelman has our records, but we'll wait because we're up against the top. But I want to hear our records because I honestly don't even know what it is right now.
I'm going to say bad.
But I'm going to say bad. We're going to get Marco, you want to prepare for your update a little bit. You did win last year, so please, let's. Normally, we go with who's in the lead, but since I don't know, we'll go with last year's defending champion off the top. Go ahead.
All right, I'm going to give you the three out of town, if you will, start
yes.
first. I'm going to go with the Steelers, +2.5 on the road against Washington.
Nice.
Look, I like what Russell Wilson has done, what the Steelers have done, what Tomlin has done. They have a tendency to win these games, especially when they're underdogs. And I do think defensively, they'll have a good game plan against Jaden Daniels in Washington. And yep. It's a step up for them a little bit, even though I don't think the Steelers are world beaters by any stretch.
Right.
But I do think this is a game that it almost has the fingerprints of Tomlin coming away with a victory in this. Washington's been rolling, but give me the Steelers +2.5.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Bills laying 3.5 on the road against the Colts. That hook sucks, but at the same time, the Bills have been playing well. They've scored. They've done what they need to do. They haven't been overwhelming most of the time. They've done what they need to do just about every game.
Mm-hmm.
And the Colts with Joe Flacco, they could be an anomaly. Like, there's some weeks that you think Flacco all of a sudden is going to turn into vintage Flacco. Other times he's going to show you that he's an old man. So I'm not really sure what the Colts are going to give me. The hook scares me a little bit because I can feel like I could lose on a field goal with the Bills winning this game, but I'm going to try it anyway. So give me the Bills laying the 3.5 on the road. And the last one, Give me the Broncos plus the 7.5 on the road for the Chiefs. Do I expect Denver to win this game? No. But I do think Kansas City, one, has played close in every game they've had.
Yeah.
Mahomes coming off the ankle, tweaked it a couple of times. He tweaked it again Monday night against the Bucs where they, again, escape late, no two-point conversion, win that thing in overtime. I feel like Denver comes back off the blowout against the Ravens. That gets a chance to wake them up a little bit. Again, they're not great. They're not going to win this game, but they'll hang around. They'll be a pain in the ass, and the Chiefs haven't really separated from anyone all season, and that last half a point could probably be what wins this thing. Plus, they have a tendency to play Kansas City tight over the last few years with Sean Payton, so I do like the Broncos, the plus 7.5. Locally, I've picked against the Giants, I think, every week since week one, and it's done me well, simply because the Giants have been a flat-out disaster, and I hand-raised, I didn't expect this. Didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to be better than this. I've been, not pleasantly, unpleasantly surprised.
Right.
This has been an unmitigated disaster.
Right.
They're in Germany. Do I expect them to beat the Panthers? They better beat the Panthers. Do I expect them to all of a sudden now turn around and win a game by a touchdown?
I
find that I struggle with that.
Yeah.
I struggle with that. As bad as Carolina's been, they get a win last week. The Giants are obviously dying for a victory. I expect them in an ugly game, vintage Germany type game, that they're going to come away with a win, but like a 2-point win. I can't lay 6.5 points. So give me the Panthers plus the 6.5. And the Jets, I've been riding the Jets all year, and it's hurt me in every one of these picks. And when Flea gives you the record, I'm sure a lot of it is because I picked with the Jets, and I've lost every single one of them. But I do think that they're going to start, I don't want to say stacking the wins. That's getting a little nuts. I don't know if this team's ready to make a total run where they're all of a sudden going to be a 10-win team. That strikes me as, I don't think it's going from one extreme to the other, but they're going to mess with your emotions, and they're going to hang around. And the more they hang around and mess with your emotions, they're going to need a few wins here and there. And this is a good spot for them. It's tough against Kyler Murray. They're going to have to contain him. It's only 1.5. Jets in an ugly win Sunday afternoon. Give me the Jets laying the 1.5 against the Cardinals.
All right, Fleegs.
All right, so first game one, I'm with Marco on the Bills. I would love to get this without the hook, but the Bills' offense looks so good right now. That Colts defense hasn't been great, and you kind of got the Joe Flacco turning back into a pumpkin moment last week on Sunday Night Football. I don't think he'll be as bad as he was in that game against the Vikings, but I just don't think they're going to be able to keep up. The Bills seem like a team to me right now that's on a little bit of a mission, and I don't think they sleep on the Colts going into next week's game against Kansas City. This could be a look-ahead spot, but I don't think it will be with the Bills. I think you get a good effort out of them. The other game is a big number for a team on the road, but the Niners after the bye the last few years with Shanahan. 4-1 in the last five. Last year, they destroyed the Jaguars on the road, and this is before the Jaguars fell apart. They were 6-2 going into that game. They beat the Chargers the year before that, and then went on that run where they didn't lose again, you know, until the postseason. They had one loss in 2021, but 2020, they get on a run after beating the Rams. They blow out the Browns in 2019, and I'm throwing out the Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard years. This team...
Yep.
I think Kyle Shanahan, if he has the long career we expect, this could become almost an Andy Reid after the bye kind of statistic. Plus, they get Christian McCaffrey back. So I'm laying the 6.5. Bucks also short week, even though they're coming home. And the third non-local game, did you guys see the report that Will Levis has returned to practice for the Titans, and he might be the quarterback in their game against the Los Angeles Chargers? I'm going to take the Los Angeles Chargers minus 7.5. Do we remember Will Levis, what he looked like at quarterback? Chargers have a couple blowout wins in their last few games. So, one are on the road, one at home. I think they're going to destroy the Tennessee Titans. The Chargers are probably going to be that sneaky, hey, they won 10 games against a schedule that's not that great, and they're in the postseason. Then locally, I'm trying to think what's going to annoy me more as it's in between 9:30 and 12:30 on Sunday, morning then afternoon, and is that watching the Giants try to cover a big spread or watching the Panthers try to keep that game close. I know what he did last week. I still don't believe that Bryce Young is an NFL quarterback. And for all the heat that Daniel Jones takes, listen, he's not good. He's not in the top half of quarterbacks.
Right.
He's in that next tier. I don't know if Bryce Young is one of the 50 best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And on top of that the Panthers are a mess, the roster stinks, I think I'd be more annoyed hoping that the Panthers can keep that game close. So as insane as it sounds, I'm going to lay a stupid number with the Giants, 6.5. And then I can't bet the Jets as favorites. I'm sorry. When this line opened, this was Cardinals minus one and a half.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
There is no world, and I should emphasize, road favorites.
Yeah.
I'm not touching the Jets as road favorites. They should win this game. They're the better team. Everything they want to do is in front of them. I get all that. This is still a team without a coach. This is still a team that has no idea what it's doing. Outside of Aaron Rodgers knows how to, even though he's physically not what he used to be, he knows how to play quarterback. Nobody else on that team has any clue what they're supposed to do in any given situation. Yeah. Give me the Cardinals, who I think run all over the Jets.
All right, but, you know, between the three of us, a lot of the same picks. I might have to change one and make a decision to go against you guys on a universal pick.
I dropped the Steelers because Marco had them.
Yeah, I love the Steelers, though, so I'm going to keep it. And I'm going to keep San Francisco minus 6.5. You said it, off the bye. They've been great. To me, Tampa Bay, not only did they come so close to winning a game, but the two-point conversion at the end of the game, the talk about not going for the win, it's demoralizing. They're injured in the wide receiver position. They're going to San Francisco is obviously so good. Short week for Tampa Bay, a bye week for San Francisco, getting McCaffrey back. I think this is just, it feels like a game San Francisco makes a statement that they're back in the NFC along with the Lions and the other teams here. I just think this is a game where they make a statement minus 6.5 against Tampa Bay. And I love Pittsburgh. Listen, I play Tomlin is one of the only coaches in the NFL. I bet the team based on the coach. Tomlin, road dog against a team has a rookie quarterback, as great as Daniels may be. A rookie quarterback against Tomlin, he dominates. A road dog, he's been tremendous. So it's just a spot where I'm playing Pittsburgh here against the rookie quarterback. They've been rolling. I understand that. The last couple weeks haven't been as good. It took a Hail Mary, and then last week against the Giants was probably closer than they would have liked. I think this is the game where he stubs his toe. Give me Pittsburgh plus 2.5 at Washington. And I was going to take Denver plus 7.5 against Kansas City and play that trend as well, as Kansas City not covering. But I'll go against you guys and have a little bit of fun. I'm going to take the Colts against Buffalo 3.5. You mentioned the look-ahead game. They got Kansas City coming into their building next week. And I do think the one thing you can attack this Buffalo team with is the ground game and just run it down their throats. And Jonathan Taylor is starting to get a feel for that. That run game is starting to get better. And that, you know, the defense, I agree, hasn't been great. But I think this is a spot where they lay the egg. And Flacco, if you can get the run game going and you can force the safeties to come up where they don't trust, you know, they want to stop the run and don't trust Flacco. He was awful last week, but he's been so good for so long now. I mean, he led the Browns to the playoffs. He's been good since he took over the quarterback position here and with Indianapolis. He had a miserable week, but I think he's better than this. And I just think it's a spot with the hook that this is a field goal game. I just have a feeling it's a field goal game. They're playing the Bills are playing the Chiefs next week, and I do think Flacco is better. So I'll take the 3.5 with Indianapolis. And then the two locals, all week it was 4.5. It was at different numbers. I was willing to take the New York Giants. I can't do it at 6.5. I don't care who they're playing. I just can't do it. They are not. The idea they're going to go to Germany and win a game by a touchdown against. It doesn't matter who. It's just a game I can't pick. The only reason why I would pick them is because I want them to lose and nothing goes right for me. So that's like the only reason why I would pick the New York Giants, but 6.5, it's just too big of a number. I don't think they're a touchdown better than anyone, no matter who the quarterback is. And then the Jets, I'm going to take the Jets minus 1.5 here in this spot against the Cardinals. If you can limit Murray, the one thing that scares me is Murray running for like 90 yards in this game. That's the one thing that scares me. I think ultimately they've been an up-and-down team. They just took the Bears out to the woodshed last week. I don't know how many good performances this team puts back-to-back. Like, I just don't know if they're capable. I think the Jets found something in that second half. I thought Rodgers looked a little bit more spry, had that run for first down that was actually called back for a penalty, but he looked better. The team looked better. They're kind of rallying behind the head coach a little bit. I just feel like that second half, after the miserable first half, for them to bounce back, rally, play the way they played in the second half against the Texans team, I think that carries this week into Arizona. So give me the Jets minus 1.5. Giants, I'll take the Cards plus the Panthers plus 6.5. San Francisco, Pittsburgh, and Indianapolis. Your picks for week 10 in the NFL.